Well, it is a real joy to be back here this morning, and I'm sure you can hardly believe it's been 3 years, and I can hardly believe it's been 3 years. And Steve is absolutely right. A week ago, I knew I was going to be here, but I didn't know I was going to be speaking. And I would never, ever normally be standing up here on short notice. But Steve shared with me that you had been looking at justice, the justice of God, and what justice means in our lives. And I knew that the story of God that I have to share with you this morning had to be shared. You know, I enjoyed a wonderful meal last night with Lorinda and Steve. Lorinda and I share the same birthday, literally the same day, the same year. I already have a twin, so she's my triplet. And they were sharing with me the journey that you as a church has been on. And some of the decisions you've made, and some of those decisions have brought great joy, and some of those decisions have been very painful decisions. And one of the things that Steve and Lorinda told me is that you had had to stop the children's ministry. And so there was a sense that you have no children's ministry, but I want to encourage you this morning. And I want to tell you that you have a ministry to children. You just haven't known about it. And I'm here this morning to tell you the ministry that you have to children. Well, even the children's Christmas boxes, that is a ministry to children. Children in Ghana receive those boxes, and the joy on their faces as they work out some of the things and what they're used for, and do they eat it or do they wash with it? It's such a joy. So be encouraged, and I hope this morning that what I have to share with you will encourage you. And I know that you have looked at Micah 6:8. He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Well, SIM has been through a time of reflection and prayer. We felt God wanted us to re-establish our roots, to go back to the reason why SIM first came into being. And that was to live, to reach out to those who live and die without hearing God's good news. To make Jesus known amongst peoples where he is least known. And as SIM Ghana met together at that time, we were challenged too to relook at what we were doing. And as we prayed together, we asked the question, who is God calling us to reach out to with the gospel in northern Ghana? Where is Jesus least known? And what resulted was the selection of two new ministries, two people groups who are still unreached with the gospel. And the first people group was a nomadic people group called the Fulani, and they are largely ignored by the church. And the second group were children, two groups precious to God, and yet still with very little gospel witness. And the ministry to unreached children was to be centered amongst the Sasala, and it was to be my new focus. And as I set out on this new ministry, I had very little idea of what God wanted to do and how he wanted to do it. But with 50% or nearly 50% of Ghana's population being under the age of 14, I was sure that God did not want us as SIM to work alone. We could not begin to develop a ministry to children and to reach children for Christ without finding partners to work with who had a similar vision and a similar passion. And surely God's chosen instrument to reach those who live and die without Jesus is his church. And so the church then needed to be the starting point for finding out what God wanted to do and how he wanted to reach children with the gospel. What outreach was already happening amongst children? What successes had the Sasala churches enjoyed? What challenges had they faced? What barriers were there to children hearing the gospel? I literally had no idea what the churches were doing apart from the church that I worked with. And as I looked round at children playing, you know, children in Ghana are like children I think when you were children, you go out in the morning and you don't come back until night and your parents don't worry about you. They seem incredibly happy. They play together, they have babies on their backs. But what was life really like for the Sisala child? What were the opportunities they enjoyed? What were the challenges they faced? And so I began to do some research with these two questions in mind. What was life like for children? And what was the church doing to reach children with the gospel? Now, the Sisala area is a large area up in the north of Ghana, and its people are Muslim, mixed with African traditional beliefs. The church in Ghana is strong, it's very strong, in the south. And it is strongly denominational. Those denominations do not work together. And I knew that in Tumu, there were several churches. Tumu is the town that I live in. I knew that there was the Pentecost, the Methodist, the Baptist Convention, the Baptist Regular, the Assemblies of God. I knew there were several churches. But it was a huge shock to find, as a result of my research, that in this very Muslim place, in Tumu, which is a lot smaller than Woodbridge, a lot smaller, there were 16 different church denominations. In a strongly Muslim town, 16 churches all meeting on Sunday in separate congregations. 16 churches in Tumu felt like a good place to start, to find out what was happening with children. And so I developed an interview questionnaire, which I was going to take out to the pastors, and I was going to interview them and find out what was happening. But then something quite extraordinary happened, and it happened before I began to interview the pastors. And it had a profound effect on the direction the research took. And it concerned justice. I told a friend that I was planning to do this research, and he said, "Oh, you must come and talk to the Ghana Education Service. They won't be able to tell you what the churches are doing, but they will be able to tell you what life is like for the Sisala child." And so I found myself sitting in the offices of the Ghana Education Service in Tumu, and opposite me was the head of the department for the girl child, the head of the department of culture, and the head of the department for the under fives. And they gave me 3 hours of their time sharing with me the challenges that children face in the Sisala area. And at the end of that time, I could barely speak. As I'd expected, many of the challenges were economic. It's a poor area. And I expected these. But the physical, emotional, and yes, sexual abuses were common, and they were shocking. And I wondered how these people managed to continue to come to their office each day and to face an environment where there were no resources for any initiatives for change, and therefore nothing changed. What can you do when a girl is made pregnant by her teacher, and the girl's parents won't back her testimony because they're hoping the teacher will marry her and make her and them financially secure? What can you do? What can you do when every 6 days on market day, the girls are pulled out of school to help their mothers sell produce so that they can have money for food? The girls fall behind in their work, and they drop out of school. And so that by the time you get to secondary school in Tumu, only 30% of school children are girls. What do you do when a girl's uncle offers to pay for her secondary school education and she goes to live with him, but he demands other favors for her from her as payment for his support? And I came away and I was incensed. And I heard God challenge me, and it was like he was saying, "You're incensed." Imagine the father heart of God, how incensed he must be at these injustices. And I felt God was saying, "Find a voice for these children." God gave us a mandate to care for the vulnerable. And as I thought about what God had said, "Find a voice for these children," who would be a voice for children? Who will seek justice for them? that voice is not found in the home. So where can it be found? And that became my new question. Could the Church of God be that voice? Well, Jo, a young lady who was serving with me at the time, and I began to meet with the pastors, and we began to ask them the questions about what outreach were they doing and what was life like for the Sasala child. And in my mind all the time was, do they know? Does the church know about these abuses? Could the church provide a voice for children? Could the Church of God seek justice? And as Jo and I talked with the pastors and we asked them, what challenges did Sasala children face? Without exception, the pastors knew. They knew about the abuses. They cared about them passionately. They wanted things to be different, but they felt too small and too powerless to do anything. Perhaps what they didn't know is they were all saying they were too small and too powerless to do anything. And so Jo and I set about collating all the results of the interviews and putting them into a format that we could present to the churches. And time was running out. It was April, and I was coming home in May. I had put this off. I was terrified. I thought, if I invite these pastors to come and listen to me talking about the results we'd found, would they come? Would they think that what I was telling them was just stuff they already knew? I was very aware that I am one of the only white people in Tumu. Who was this white lady telling us stuff we already know? I was terrified. And I kept on thinking, well, I'll leave it until I come back. And then I'll tell them. And then we can do something about it. And again, I felt that burning within my heart. And God saying, no, speak now. You know, we are so arrogant sometimes, aren't we? We think that God needs a lot of help with his planning. And what God was about to show me that he had been planning, not just in these last 3 years, he had been planning for years for this moment. And I said, okay, Lord, with your help, I will do this. Well, I have to tell you, in Ghana, every meeting, and don't let the word meeting fool you, a meeting means a whole day usually, starts with a devotion. And so I decided to ask the chairman of the Council of Churches to lead that devotion. Now, the Council of Churches was not working. They didn't meet. If they did, nothing ever happened. They didn't work well together. But this was a godly man who had a real heart for children. And I said, Pastor Noah, would you lead a devotion? I had left it to the last minute, and he went, ugh. And I was being very British. I thought, oh, no, I've left it to the last minute. And he shook his head, and he said, Sister, it would be an honor. And after picking myself off the floor, again, I was just aware of God's graciousness. And he said, more than that, he said, we are having a meeting of the Council of Churches on Thursday. You must come, and you must tell the pastors about your desire for this meeting to feedback on your research. And so I went. And at the end of my invitation to these pastors, say, please come to the meeting to hear the results. Pastor Noah said to them, come to this meeting. Brothers, we need to hear this. Well, the Saturday arrived. I decided to have it in a school because I didn't want it to be associated with any church denomination. And there was a power cut. I forgot that power cuts always happen on Saturday, unless it's a football match. And so I was praying for the power to come back on because these research results were dry, and without a PowerPoint, they were going to be drier than dry. Well, the power came on, and all the pastors came, including the Roman Catholic father and Sister Linda, with whom I had had the most amazing interview with. The Roman Catholic Church never comes to meetings with the other pastors. God was really at work. So what did the research results show? Well, in terms of outreach, I want to tell you three things. All but one church had a children's Sunday school, and a significant number of children attending those Sunday schools did not have their parents in church. In other words, they came of their own accord. And a significant number of those children came from Muslim homes. So Sunday school was an important form of outreach. But without exception, it was the only form of outreach. Sunday school was the only time that the churches specifically reached out to children. And the third thing was, all the pastors said, the greatest barrier to children hearing about Jesus is opposition from the parents to them going to church. So the only form of outreach was on Sunday, and yet the greatest barrier was for children to go to church on Sunday. And I knew this to be true. If you are a Muslim and your other Muslim friends see your children going to church on Sunday, that does not look good. If you have a Bible club during the week, as we do, and your children go to the Bible club, your neighbors don't know where your children are going. And their parents didn't mind. They gave us permission, the children came, but because the children were not seen to be going to church, they were allowed to go. And it was good for the pastors to see they were all saying the same thing. They were all saying, yes, Sunday school, but only Sunday school. And yet it was a great barrier to them, to the children hearing about Jesus. And the other thing, that they all said they wanted more training, they all said they wanted more resources, and they all said they wanted more teachers, and they all said the same things. And they all said that if we organized seminars for teacher training together, they would all come, interdenominationally. And so that was really positive, and that was an area that I thought, yes, Lord, this is somewhere where SIM can work with the churches to develop training, to equip the church to reach out to children. And so that was really exciting, and that is what I will be going back to. But what about the Sasala child? Well, I fed back on the challenges that they had cited, and they saw that they were all saying the same thing. They all felt the same passion, that things should be different, but they all felt too small to make a difference. They knew about the abuses. They hated that it was happening, but they felt too small to do anything. And so I challenged them. I said, together, could not the church be a voice for children? And I opened the floor up for discussion and questions, and something quite amazing happened. Everyone had something to say. Everyone was of one heart and one mind. They said, sister, we want SIM to help with developing training. But when it comes to the second set of results, when it comes to the challenges faced by the children, they turned to me and said, sister, you can do no more. We need to stand together as a church. We need to stand together as a church, but more than this, we need to go to the community leaders and we need to tell them about what's happening. And we need to get the community leaders to go to the chiefs and the paramount chiefs, and get the paramount chiefs to go to the government and to lobby the government so that that change happens, so that these abuses stops, and so that these things can be different. This is something we must do as a church. Well, I had no idea that was going to happen. What a privilege to see God working so powerfully. All through this process, I had seen God at work, but I never expected he was working in quite such a profound way, and his timing was so perfect. I will admit to you, I had labored on this project for months, years, and sometimes not labored on the project for months, years, because I didn't like going out there and having to have this relationship, build these relationships, and yet it was the richest thing that came out of that, building relationships. But God knew my timing and my reluctance, and he used it to his glory. And so the moment that the churches were starting to move together in unity, that moment, as that unity was gaining momentum, that was the moment that God got me to feed back those results. And I didn't know that. I did not know that the Sasala churches were coming together. I did not know that 4 days later they were going to have an interdenominational half night of prayer where everybody was there. But God knew, and God knew that this was the time to challenge the churches to use this unity to provide a voice for children. And in closing, the chairman of the local council of churches stood up and he said, sister, you have left footprints. It is now up to us to follow those footprints, to move forward together as a church, united in Christ, to move forward as one voice to stop the abuses of children and to give them a voice. I praise God that I can say of the Sala Church, He has shown them what is good. And what does the Lord require of them? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with their God. That is what I saw that afternoon. And what a privilege to be part of a time like this, where God is moving in a powerful way, and I'm so excited to see what He will do next. This is God's amazing story, and it's been such a privilege for me to be part of it, and it is the story that I want you to know about because you have been part of it. Through your prayer and through your support, through your standing alongside me through these years, God has been working through you. God has been working through you to provide a voice for children in the Sala, to seek justice for children in the Sala. God is an amazing God, and He works with us, through us, and often in spite of us. The Sala Church is standing together, united today in their desire to seek justice for children. Because of your prayers, you have a ministry to children. And all the glory goes to our wonderful God. Let's pray.